so lovely. You just like open and present in a very ordinary but wonderfully fulfilling way. Breathing in that lovely scent of fall air. Feeling the coolness on the skin. That chant that we do before we begin the Dharma talk says, "The Dharma infinitely profound and minutely subtle is rarely encountered, even in hundreds of thousands of millions of ages." That's kind of what I want to talk about today, because that can be, that's one of the statements that can be so misunderstood. It's rarely encountered, not because it's somewhere else and we have to get there, but it's so present that we may not notice. We get so accustomed to our human experience that we may not even notice it. It's like our hands, you know. Have you ever looked at your hands like maybe a child does when they first discover their hands? I mean, it's pretty strange, these little appendages, and they move all over and they do things. And I mean, we can become freshly just so appreciative of all kinds of things. Teeth. I chipped a tooth. I mean, how often do I thank my teeth? And now it's like I'm really appreciative of how they stay together and what they do for me, and how they lay low so I don't have to pay attention to them much of the time. So what I want to talk about is ordinary mind. And I want to tap a koan. Koans are these cases, these public cases, that have been passed down as teaching stories. And they're usually, often they are an exchange between a teacher and a student about this matter of what is the mind, what is the way, what is the Dharma way, what's the Buddha way, what's the capital W way, the Tao. Okay, so when I use the way in this talk, I'm talking about the capital W way, which is also the ordinary way. So this is a koan that gets at it in a truly Zen style. And it's case 19 of the Mumonkan. Joshu asked Nansen, "What is the way?" "Ordinary mind is the way," Nansen replied. "Shall I try to seek after it?" Joshu asked. "Well, if you try for it, you'll become separated from it," responded Nansen. "Well, how can I know the way unless I try for it?" persisted Joshu. Nansen said, "The way is not a matter of knowing or not knowing. Knowing is delusion. Not knowing is confusion. When you've really reached the true way beyond doubt, you'll find it as vast and boundless as space. How can it be talked about on the level of right and wrong?" And with these words, Joshu came to a sudden realization. So Mumon comments. Mumon is the one who collected these koans, and he sets out the case, and then he has a comment, and then he has a verse. So his comment is, "Nansen, who is the teacher, dissolved and melted away before Joshu's question, and could not offer a plausible explanation. Even though Joshu, who is the student, comes to a realization, he must delve into it for another 30 years before he can fully understand it." So he came to a realization, but he needs another 30 years to really understand it. So this is there are some ways in which this doesn't flow out in the usual meaning sense, huh? Which is wonderful, because it stops us in our tracks and we say, What's being said here? Mulan's verse. The spring flowers, the autumn moon, summer breezes, winter snow. If useless things do not clutter our mind, do not clutter your mind, you have the best days of your life. If useless things do not clutter your mind, you have the best days of your life. That's quite a promise. I want the best days of my life. Do you? I assume that everybody who's here wants the best days of their life and may have tasted some of those days or moments. Some people come to practice because you've tasted it and you want to kind of work it with more awareness and skill. And other people come to practice because you're desperately in need of a good day. And nothing you've tried has gotten you a good day. And others come just because that's what you do. So there are a lot of ways in which we get habituated to this practice, and a lot of things bring us to it. So this is one of the many koans that students of Zen work with in their Zen training. And a koan helps us look at our lives every which way and kind of uncover habitual, conventional ways of thinking about that cover over our fuller experience, our fuller, lively experience. So one reason why koans don't always make sense right away is because they're flipping from the conventional way. They kind of trap, they hook the conventional mind that thinks in a certain way about things and then pulls the conventional meaning out from under, which leaves you directly on the ground of a genuine what? Huh? You're genuinely asking, you're stopped. You don't have a conventional, habitual way of going forward. And so you can really pay attention. It can feel hostile. A lot of people who start koan work feel as though some hostility has moved in on them. Because you're trapped and you can't win. And your usual sense of yourself as competent and smart doesn't help you out. But even if you don't work on the koans in a traditional way, and this is a sangha where we don't work traditionally with koans, but we are going to work more with koans in various untraditional ways, they help with a question that nearly everyone comes to practice with, which is, what is this practice all about? What is the way that is talked about, that's so famous? And trying to get at what questions to ask. Very often, when you begin practice, you're enticed because you can feel the truth of this. You can feel the ready, ordinary relief of just being simple and sitting. But if somebody says, so any questions? You think, well, yeah, my whole self is a question, but I have no idea what that question is. We all have, that's certainly an experience that I've had for many years. So what questions do we ask? And so this is a great introduction to asking a question. Joshi says, what is the way? What is the way? What can I discover that seems, you know, in my ordinary life, what can I discover that helps me figure out what you're talking about? You know, what you, Zen, is talking about. And this is really a time when we can feel on really shaky ground. A friend says, so what have you been doing? You say, oh, I've been sitting Zen. It's just really, really helping me. And they say, well, what is it? What is Zen anyway? And you go, the present moment, and they look at you like, yeah, right? All you can say truthfully is, I don't know. And that's what Zen is all about, knowing and not knowing, and exploring the realm. What is it? How do we live in not knowing that's not confusion? And what do we come to know that's not delusion? So Nansen answers him when he says, what is the way? Ordinary mind is the way. Okay, so right there, you know, when I first heard this koan, I thought, I have a problem. Because I don't know what it's talking about. What do you mean, ordinary mind? Ordinary mind, and yet I have all kinds of distractions. I can't steady my mind. I can't meditate, but I don't even know what meditation is. So all of this not knowing comes up, all of this confusion. And the only thing that I know with my ordinary mind is my the pressure that I experience from my schedule or from my demand, the demands of work or family, or just coping with my own emotional territory. You know, that's what I know. I know anguish. I know discouragement. And I also know that I don't know what I'm talking about. So, you ask, as Joshua did here, shall I try to seek after it? And then Nansen cuts off this conventional way of approaching things that are new, which is we approach new things with trying. You know, oh, I could never ride a bicycle. Well, just try. I don't know how to float. I'm going to sink. When I was in college, I had to pass a swimming test. Did anybody else, in order to graduate, did anybody else have that requirement? And so I grew up by the ocean. I had some pretty traumatic early near-drowning experiences, so I never learned to swim. And so I got to college, and I couldn't graduate unless I learned how to swim. And of course, I was outraged. This has nothing to do with college. But they had this ex-marine trainer who was in charge of teaching us poor non-floaters. She had us line up by the side of the pool and said, okay, you're all going in. And I thought I was going to faint. I was so frightened. She said, just hold your arms straight out. And then she pushed. And that was it. She said, keep your arms out, keep your arms out. And then I didn't go down. It was like, oh, okay. I would never have tried. I mean, I had tried before, but this was the push. And that's really the way our life is. We get pushed. A lot of things we're not willing to try, we don't have a choice about. It's not a matter of trying. It's a matter of somehow staying afloat. And maybe you're lucky and you have a marine trainer who's going to show you to keep your arms out. Keep your mind open. Keep your heart open. Ordinary mind is the way. But Nansen cuts off this possibility of trying. He says, trying isn't going to get you anywhere. He addresses the whole issue of trying. Well, the problem with trying is sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And trying expresses a lack of belief or confidence or wholeheartedness, or I'm going to put my whole self into this and I'm just going to figure it out, right? It's a determination that may be missing if you're trying. So there are a lot of things that go into this particular way of formulating the problem here. And especially with our life, you know, we've been trying our whole lives. But we always live our ordinary life. The only thing we bring into practice is ordinary mind. So Nansen gives his first clue. He says, if you try for it, you will become separated from it. So here in this line, we can get fixated on the whole idea of trying. But actually, the clue lies further along in the sentence, which is separated. If you try for it, it's something other than this, and there's a separation. So if you try for it, you will become separated from it. How does trying separate us from attaining our true life? That's one of the questions that this koan is bringing us to. And it brings us right back to the first question, the question that Jeshu started with, what is the way? And this around and around and aroundedness is exactly how it feels when we're confused. The terms in which we're asking the question doesn't allow us to break out from the terms of the question. But if you come to Zen practice, any of us who come to Zen practice have an inkling that the Zen insight is really fresh. It's really fresh, and it's really free. It's free of this conventional same old, in some way. We come to this practice because we want to feel real and alive, and we don't. We don't necessarily feel real and alive. So we don't have something that we need. We're missing something. So we come with a feeling of missing something. I don't get what Zen means. I'm missing the meaning of this teaching. I don't even get what this is all about. I don't get what my life is all about. What am I supposed to do with my life? You know, we come to that when we're young and starting out in our adult years. We come to it again when we've done the work of the world as it was laid out for us at about 40 or there, give or take 10 years. And then we come to it again in retirement, now that we're living so much longer. It's like, what am I supposed to do with my life? So this is an ongoing question. It's not a question, I mean, kids are asked that, what do you want to be when you grow up? And they'll refer to their favorite game or their favorite pretend person to be, their favorite hero of some sort. But that's just play. That's not a serious question. Not for many years. Because kids are living right in the moment. There's a clue. They know what's going on with themselves. Kids who are okay, whose circumstances allow them to be free to really play, right? So, Nansen cuts off the trying road. He says, the way is not a matter of knowing or not knowing. The way is not a matter of getting somewhere else. And this just compounds Joshu's quandary, and it shines a light on his confusion. It's not a matter of knowing or not knowing. What is there besides knowing and not knowing? So Nansen continues, the way is not a matter of knowing or not knowing. Knowing is delusion and not knowing is confusion. So that's where we are in this koan. This is where it leaves us, is completely confused. I can turn toward delusion of knowing, or I can turn back to confusion of not knowing. And this reminds me of the story, and most of you probably have heard this, of a man walking across a field, and he suddenly becomes aware that he's being pursued by a tiger who's gaining on him very quickly. So he starts to run. He just takes off to get away from this tiger. And he runs and runs and runs, and then he gets to the edge of a cliff. And down below, there are some other tigers. It's like, shit, what should I do? But, you know, he looks back, and this tiger right here is almost on him, and those are a little further away. So he leaps off this cliff, and he takes hold of a vine and leaps, and he holds onto a vine, and there he is, off the side of the cliff, tiger's waiting for him below, and he looks over, and there on a little ledge is a strawberry. A beautiful, luscious, glistening, sweet red that says sweet and delicious, which opens up the moment for him a bit because he really stops. The strawberries are red, huh? Red light, stop. However, it's not as simple as that. It's not as simple as stopping, because chewing on the vine is a white mouse and a black mouse. Night and day, chewing on this vine that we cling to, that we hold on to keep us from plummeting to our demise. I love that story. I think of it in many circumstances, because it really does describe our life situation in many different ways.
Doesn't he eat the
strawberry? Are you confused? You want to know what happens? You want to know what he does?
I thought it ended with him eating the strawberry.
Absolutely.
Like really enjoying it.
What happens? It's not.
I can't stand it. I got
to know. Knowing and not knowing.
So you're running from the tiger. I can't stand it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing that's so wonderful about this story is we all get, we're held by different parts of it, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we do. We get hung up in different ways in our lives. He's running away. There's more right up ahead. But here's that strawberry. You can smell it. So aversion, attraction, fear, desire. And then he takes refuge. And even that refuge is brief. It promises not to hold forever, right? So what does he do? It's exactly the question. What does he do? Do you know? No, I don't know. I don't know what he does. It's just a story. So this is the feeling, I think, the koan feeling is like, you know, I receive a koan from my teacher and I think, oh no, uh-oh. Now what? How do I do this? But then Nansen goes on and he says, when you have really reached the true way beyond doubt, when you are beyond doubt, when you really have reached the way and you feel like your life is completely opened up, you will find it as vast and boundless as space. That moment with the sweet strawberry is vast. Absolutely, when you become completely absorbed in any one thing, there is no thinking going on, and there's no edges to the experience. It is boundless. And your sense of before and after, gone for that, right there, right in the moment. So this is describing qualities of the experience of being thoroughly in the moment. Vast and boundless as space in this moment. Where is the edge of a moment? What is a moment anyway? That is something that only the ordinary mind can discern. We can all enjoy that practice as we go forward into this day of Sunday. See if you can catch a moment. What is a moment? Where's the edge of it? Where did it begin? Is there an end to the moment? So actually, and then the last line is, how can it be talked about on the level of right and wrong? Opposites. you know, the verbal, kind of the verbal representation of things. We can't talk about our life experience, our direct experience. Let's not mistake it for the concepts about our experience. The true way beyond doubt. I once had a conversation with my own teacher, and I said, "Well, I think I'm clear. I think I'm all the way through." And she said, "Well, that's like saying I think I had a baby." Do we think? What is our direct experience? What is ordinary mind? Ordinary mind is not saying the thinking mind. It's not saying the verbal universe. It's not, it's just direct in all of its vastness. He mentions one other word that I think is good to bring up, which is beyond doubt. When you were first encountered, beyond doubt, the way. There are a couple of kinds of doubt. One that's considered one of the hindrances to practice is skeptical doubt, where you don't really believe that this practice is worth anything, but you'll give it a try, or you don't really believe that you can be free of your own miseries. Right? That's skeptical doubt. That's being skeptical about the efficacy. It's a mind without faith. A mind without trust. But then there's great doubt, which there's a lot of mention of in Zen teaching. And great doubt is beyond not knowing. Great doubt is actually the mind of faith. Great doubt, you know, I think of that in terms of how it feels to be alive, really alive, is everything that comes along is an appearance. But there's so much more to any one little element of our life that is not apparent. So going forward with this openness to possibilities, endless possibilities, is one of the things that great doubt points to. Great doubt, when everything that you hold on to isn't holding any longer, and you don't know what. And first there's tremendous fear, but after a while it becomes the basis for faith. It's really quite mysterious. Every religious tradition taps this. This is human, this is innate in our spiritual nature. When we are open with no edges. So that is what I would say today about this koan. Koans continually unfold. I've been working with Ordinary Life is the Way for years. It continues to unfold freshly, just as ordinary life continues to unfold freshly, without knowing. You get up in the morning and you think you got your schedule all written out, and at 9 o'clock this and da 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 da. And then it slides sideways. It doesn't happen that way. Or it does unfold that way, but it has texture that there's no way you could have anticipated. So Ordinary Life is the Way is a wonderful koan for everybody to live with. What is the way in this moment for me? What is this way that we are being urge to awaken to, this way of living open. heart of faith, that life is complete and your life is complete. And it's very specific to you. This is what we can discover with practice. Thank you.
The Four Great Bodhisattva Vows can be found on page 5 of your chapbook. Four great bodhisattva vows.